Coming up on a year and a half in the pandemic, there's hope on the near horizon to get back to a pre-pandemic normal.
And it's not out of place to assume that includes a return to things like work, schools, malls, and social gatherings.
But Canadians are nervous about that return, with good reason. I'm Adam Toy.
And I'm Dave McIver, and this is Why.
With more vaccines going into arms, provinces are rolling out their reopening plans, and some are even expecting to remove all restrictions by Canada Day.
If that sounds like a too quick return to crowded malls and offices after a year and a half of the pandemic, you're not alone. A recent Léger poll found 53% of Canadians were anxious about a, quote, return to normal.
Let's ask the obvious question. Once things reopen, as more vaccines get into arms, is it going to be, quote unquote, normal, or will it be abnormal? Will it be weird to feel a bit of anxiety, a bit of nervousness of going back into what we were doing pre-pandemic?
Sure. So maybe I'll just preface that throughout the pandemic, I've been urging people not to talk about social distancing. I know that's often the language used, but rather to focus on physical distancing, because just like you said, Adam, humans are social animals and we need social connection. In fact, we often identify who we are in terms of our relationships. And so, you know, the fact that over the last year and a half or so, we've had these social relationships perturbed has been a real challenge for many people.
That's Keith Dobson, a professor of clinical psychology at the University of Calgary.
In terms of going forward, I think, again, we can anticipate that a number of people are going to have ongoing challenges. So again, if we sort of step back from the pandemic and think about the nature of anxiety, anxiety usually emerges when there are three factors present. One is unpredictability. So if you don't know what's going to happen, but you know something is, you know, something coming down the road, but you're not quite sure what form it's going to take or when it's going to occur, that raises anxiety. Second is lack of controllability. So even if you know what the event is, but you can't really fully control it, then people tend to become more anxious or stressed. And then the third is salience or importance or threat, you know, just basically how dangerous is the situation itself. So as those perceptions increase, as people, you know, see more lack of predictability, lack of controllability, more importance, they become more anxious. And early in the pandemic, we had lots of lack of predictability because we just didn't know much about it. So as time has gone on, we've been able to get more information. We aren't able to control that much, to be honest. You know, our methods of control are pretty weak, face masks and, hand sanitization and so on. And we know the salience is huge, people have died. So it's mm-hmm. been critical. So it's not surprising people have been anxious at all.
Well, yeah, the past year and a half, we have been told by the medical community, by virology, that humans, potentially other humans, are potentially a threat because they carry the virus. Humans are the virus, as the saying went. I'm wondering if what that will be, if we're a social being, but other humans were threats, that's going to take a bit of time to get used to being around other people, won't it?
Absolutely, yeah. And again, I think we have to distinguish in terms of the threat that people represent. There actually are sort of two elements to it. One is the social element. And again, we've recognized for a long time the construct of what we call social anxiety or social phobia. And this usually has the form of people being afraid of what other people are thinking about you, or, the fact of just being in a social relationship can be threatening for some people. The threat of losing the relationship sometimes creates social anxiety. The other is health anxiety. So this is anxiety about, disease and infection and so on. And one of the challenges, again, we have with COVID-19 is we have both present. We have people as a threat, but we also have the disease or, the illness itself as a threat. And so for some people, they actually truly have social anxiety. And for them, returning to social situations is going to be a challenge. And it would have been anyway, be prior to COVID. But it's going to be confused now because, again, some people are going to be scared of other people or nervous around other people because of the threat of infection. So it's going to be a sort of a more of a combined or confused situation.
Now, personally, I can't wait to get back into social situations, but I imagine there are going to be people who are nervous of getting back into those situations because they may feel like they don't even know how to make small talk anymore.
Absolutely. Some people have social anxiety because of poor social skills, or sometimes they perceive their social skills to be inadequate. And so they withdraw from social relationships and they don't develop the skills the way that they could otherwise. Exactly right. So there's different factors. And the other thing, of course, is some people before the pandemic had social anxiety.
Right.
And for those people, some of them have actually reported actually feeling better during the pandemic because they've been able to avoid people and it's been socially allowed or socially encouraged. For them, this return to work or return to school is going to be a particular challenge, I think.
So it'll be a lot of kind of rebuilding those social skills as society reopens. I'm wondering, this pandemic has had a variety of effects depending on the individual, but I think that I was just speaking with Calgary's mayor the other day, and he was saying that it's going to be important to recognize that there has been loss, that there has been, or another word, trauma happened through this pandemic. If it's loss of a job, not being able to see your friends or family for extended periods of time, or even potentially at worst, losing a friend or a loved one. Mm-hmm. What is the kind of the best practice or how can one work through that trauma such that they can emerge in a bit of a healthier position as this reopening continues?
So if we step back from the pandemic for a second, the nature of anxiety and stress is that it tends to be a future-oriented kind of reaction. So we're stressed about things that haven't yet occurred. Typically, we anticipate or worry about things that are going to happen. We tend to become depressed or sad or have grief reactions to the events that have already occurred. So you're absolutely right. We're at a point now where we have this combination of both anxiety about what will happen, with respect to reopening, but then we have had a lot of loss and a lot of negative experience. And so again, as people reflect on the last year and a half and, the losses you talked about and lost opportunity or just the idea of the lost year, a year out of my life that's disappeared now. I mean, we've all experienced various forms of loss. So for loss, for anxiety and stress, our typical response in therapy for psychology is to encourage people to approach the thing that they're afraid of. So the typical suggestion is rather than stepping back and maintaining anxiety and, worrying about what might happen, actually approach the event and find out, approach it with your best foot forward, ideally having optimal skills, coping skills, that you can approach it and not avoid. For events that have already occurred, you can't avoid, of course. So then the focus shifts more to things like acceptance, learning that, you can't change the past, unfortunately. You need to grieve. And again, people need to be allowed to, have an appropriate expression of grief. We've known, for example, that many people have not been able to have funeral experiences for people that have died. So I would anticipate a number of people are going to want to have memorial ceremonies of that type. I think if people want to just simply stop and think about the things that they've lost and recognize those, that's entirely appropriate. And again, ideally we will allow and encourage people to have that experience. But then of course, having done that, the question is now, what do you do? And then we would of course encourage people to re-engage, set new goals, move forward as best they can.
Keith, you mentioned addressing a lot of these things in therapy. What are some methods if people don't have immediate access or don't have a healthcare plan that would allow them access to any sort of talk therapy? What are some of the other things that people can do to address anxiety or stress?
So, that's a great question. So one of the things that we focus on oftentimes when we know there are stressors that are coming down the line is trying to help people to feel safe or secure. So again, trying to maximize the controllability and, the sense that you can actually get through it. And that's good in the short term. It actually does reduce anxiety. So I think, some degree of mitigation of risk and encouraging people to take the risks, I think is going to be helpful. In the longer term, unfortunately, those kinds of reassurances can actually create anxiety. because what you're doing is you're saying, in effect, that things are dangerous and we need to control them, or we need to manage them as best we can. And what we think from a psychological perspective is actually better for people to expose themselves to risk and to realize that oftentimes their perceptions of danger are not as bad as the situation actually is. Or if they think they don't have the coping skills, or the controllability element, that they actually can develop the coping skills to manage the anxiety. So in treatment, what we typically do is encourage people to approach rather than avoid things that they're afraid of, and to develop their coping skills as they need to, as they do that work.
Society is opening up more and more in the coming months now that more vaccines are getting into arms. And when I say society, I mean more Canadian society and our neighbors south of the border. Returning to work is, for a lot of folks, especially folks who do a lot more office-bound work, that's going to become more and more of a thing. More and more people are going to want to return to work, and more employers are going to probably want to have people return to work. However, it's, what that mix is going to look like is maybe a bit of a question. But beyond even that, I can imagine that there's going to be some trepidation of people even returning to work, given that, with COVID-19, it's spread person to person. And if you're in a bit of an open or if you're in an office environment, as opposed to staying home, you have less control over the potential for spread. I'm wondering what your thoughts are as far as some of the challenges of returning to work with some of those anxieties, some of that stress surrounding the virus.
Yeah, we're seeing an interesting push-pull relationship right now where employers are getting anxious because they want employees back at work. Whereas employees, we're seeing, a vast majority of them are enjoying the flexibility of working from home.
That's Lauren Florco, talent management consultant.
People do want that exposure to be able to come in if they feel they need to, and kind of having that autonomy to be able to start choosing. And so as employees are now getting faced with, some are probably going to be faced with forced to come back to work. And we're starting to see some different reactions based on that. We're seeing some people completely withdraw and say, I'm going to quit if I'm forced to come back, and we're seeing that now people are looking at jobs and they're only looking where for flexible opportunities. But we're also going to see a huge jump in terms of how many people are going to start potentially going on sick leave to be able to work from home, where they have accommodations put in place so that they can still work from home if they're feeling forced to come back, which we're going to see that even with people that don't feel anxious. It's that similar phenomenon where, when you go on vacation is once you get the cold, it's basically you feel relaxed and you're like, okay, things are back to normal. Everything that your body was trying to fight and keep down, and those are going to come pop back up. So people might end up having to come work from home, even if they weren't necessarily anxious.
Lauren, it seems like there's an opportunity here with employers to embrace more flexible working condition and allow employees to produce work that isn't tied to the office. What are some of the things employers have to weigh when requesting employees return to the workplace?
Yeah, there's definitely lots of benefits that we saw initially, like productivity was increased or if not stayed the same. We saw differences in terms of now you can actually have be more inclusive with people that needed at-home work. For people with disabilities can now much easier work from home. But some of those pieces that are going to be trickier are, we are still talking about just those people that even have the option to work from home, right? So there's things to consider in terms of, is this a customer-facing job where they need to be? And what does customer facing nowadays look like? If it's something like retail, probably yes. But if you're, if you were, for instance, the banking industry, a lot of that can be done. Your customer facing can be done on Zoom, doesn't need to be face to face. So rethinking what does actual face to face work look like? And employers also need to consider, what does the office look like? You know, unfortunately, we just had that huge trend of open concept, and now people are going to be, you know, not enjoying that coming through. So how can we do desk hoteling, or how can we now redesign so that there are meeting rooms that people can book, so that people do have offices when they do come in on that, and balancing how many people are in at a time.
And I mean, that speaks to some of the challenges facing managers right now, as far as trying to figure out how to accommodate, some employee requests, as far as making them comfortable in being able to work in the office space, given the structures are there, but also, you know, keeping it a safe place to work. What are some things that managers or decision makers in the workplace can keep in mind when they are welcoming people back to work in this post-pandemic reality?
Yeah, managers are faced with some tough new skills that they're basically having to learn, because, you know, initially, older ways of management practice was everyone gets equal treatment. And now we have to actually think about more equity rather than equality, right? And so having those individual conversations with people to understand what do they need, and also thinking about the job specifically as an individual piece, like, you know, maybe most of your IT team can work from home, but maybe there's a person who actually works with the servers that needs to come in and be at the office. And so how does that feel fair? And how does that person understand that that's their role requirement? So taking that on, knowing that means they'll have to be in changes. And so having those, you know, managers will have to have those individual conversations, see what people want, needs, see what the role wants, needs. And then also talking with the team and saying, this is what we're thinking as a group. Does this feel fair to everyone? And making sure that you're open and transparent with that, because if someone finds out, hey, I didn't know that I could be working from home because you gave so-and-so it, but I didn't think that was an option, opens that up so people feel that they can raise their hand for those same pieces and things feel more fair.
And the third piece in workplaces is obviously the employees. What are some things employees can do to make the transition back to the office more smooth for us and our fellow workers?
So with employees right now, I think feeling more comfortable speaking up on what your needs are is very important. Not assuming that our managers will reach out and ask us, because, you know, our managers could also be going under the same stresses and they're just working, you know, to get the work done themselves. And so they might not even think to check in with you. So making sure that you can speak up, and if you don't feel comfortable with your boss, talking to HR what you need. And then also trying to take those steps to help give you a sense of control in your environment, and finding those spots so that, you know, help reduce your potential anxiety. So if you can incorporate, even if you're in the working, back at work, if you can incorporate walking meetings, that helps, you know, any sort of exercise helps, gets out, you're in fresh air, you don't feel as trapped potentially in an office with someone. If you're able to book an extra large conference room so you have space, you know, if you are lucky enough to have an office, you can try and shut your door so you're still there. You know, you can wear a mask as long as you want to wear a mask. We can hear so that if whatever you find, helps feel like you have a sense of control over the situation, the better.
This Is Why is produced by me, Adam Toy, and Dave McIver. It's a national radio show and a podcast.
You can reach us by email at thisiswhy@globalnews.ca and on Twitter at thisiswhy.
If you like what you hear and you want to hear more, please make sure you subscribe to This Is Why so you never miss an episode. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. And if you like what you're hearing, tell a friend.
Thanks for listening. Wash your hands, wear a mask, get vaccinated if you can. We'll see you soon.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.